For someone whose name is synonymous with cybersecurity, McAfee was no ordinary figure. His life was a roller coaster ride filled with thrilling highs and perplexing lows. From his groundbreaking contributions to the digital realm to his eventual fall from grace, McAfee's journey was one of complexity, controversy, and unmistakable eccentricity. But beneath the veneer of success lay a turbulent existence, marked by legal run-ins and a quest for personal freedom. Ladies and gentlemen, welcome back to Tax Crime Junkies. We got a juicy two-part series for you to enjoy. Today, we're exploring the fascinating story of John McAfee. John was a man of many contradictions. He was a tech pioneer who made millions and a libertarian who stood up for marginalized communities. But he was also a fugitive on the run several times, and he claimed to be hunted by government agencies and drug cartels alike. I'm your host, Dom. I'm a CPA, certified tax strategist. I have an interest in true crimes. I have a degree in law and lead the American Institute of Certified Tax Planners. And with me today is my oh-so-lovable co-host, Tom Gorzinski.
Hey, Dom. I'm Tom Gorzinski. I'm an enrolled agent. I'm admitted to practice before the United States Tax Court as a non-attorney. I'm a tax instructor. And like you, I have a real interest in true crime. So we decided to create a true crime podcast to combine our love of mysteries, whodunits, and tax. We are the Tax Crime Junkies. You're right. Today's episode is a chaotic one. Life was full of color, and his death was one that has been shrouded in mystery and danger for many years. At the heart of his story was his rise to fame and fortune as the founder of the world's first antivirus software company, all the way back in 1987.
No kidding. He's that antivirus guy, the guy whose name is probably on your computer right now begging you to resubscribe. At least that's what mine's doing. John walked away with an estimated $100 million when the company went public, but his life was far from ordinary. He had always been drawn to the disenfranchised, and he ran for president twice as a Libertarian Party candidate. The most recent time was in 2020, so not that long ago.
Well, those attempts at office didn't stop rumors about his personal life from circulating. There were accusations of murder, involvement with drugs and younger women, suggestions he had fathered dozens of children. He had run-ins with the IRS. He actually refused to file a tax return for over a decade. He made millions by pumping crypto meme coins, but didn't report or pay tax on it.
Ah, so this is where we come in. You can have dozens of kids all over the world, Tom, not even know how many, but the minute you don't file tax returns, that's where the trouble begins. It seems as if he had trust issues with authority, which were in stark contrast to his wealth and success, and it led him to flee the U.S. in early 2019. He bought a yacht from the Wolf of Wall Street and documented the cash sale in an online video post before taking off into international waters, eventually docking in the Bahamas, Havana, and the Dominican Republic. It's almost like he was baiting people to come find him.
You know, Dom, he built one of the biggest antivirus companies to date, cementing himself in the tech world as a cybersecurity pioneer. But it's what happened after that chapter or phase of his life that really catapulted him into mainstream knowledge today.
So let's open with what we do best, which is cover the tax crimes of our lucky subjects. After sifting through some of the court documents, it's apparent that McAfee failed to file tax returns for 4 years, despite earning reportedly more than $11 million from promoting cryptocurrencies. He was also doing consulting work. He did a ton of speaking engagements, and he also sold the rights to his life story for a documentary.
Wow, $11 million, I mean, that's a lot of money. How did he manage to evade the tax man for so long?
Apparently, McAfee used various tactics to hide his income and assets from the IRS, such as directing his income to bank accounts and cryptocurrency exchange accounts that were in the names of nominees. So we've talked about this before, Tom. You can't assign income to someone who didn't actually get it. He used shell companies. He used trusts to hold his properties and assets. And he even concealed his yacht, vehicles, and real estate properties. It's pretty similar to other schemes that we've covered on this show.
Yeah, that's crazy. Essentially, he took affirmative actions to purposefully conceal the money. And that's what a tax criminal does. And even though he was famous, he must have thought he could get away with it forever. Again, like most tax criminals do.
Sometimes that's their downfall, right? They're obsessed with their plan and their ability to scheme that they don't see it coming. Well, that part comes towards the end of his story. So let's go back to the beginning. McAfee was a shrewd and resourceful individual, and he set out on his path to success by launching a unique business selling magazines. This was right out of high school, Tom, and his first business as a magazine salesperson had a twist. The magazines themselves were offered for free, but customers had to pay for the shipping and handling fees. You've seen this scheme before, yes, right? So, of course, this approach was a ruse, and he explained in an interview with Wired Magazine in 2012 that he was so confident in his pitch to customers, and he emphasized that there was a cost associated with the magazines. Despite his unconventional approach, McAfee's strategy proved successful, and he made money.
McAfee actually boasted to the publication saying he made a fortune, reflecting on the remarkable success of the magazine venture. The early years of his entrepreneurial journey were marked by prosperity and a burgeoning financial empire.
Yeah, let's talk a little bit about him and how he got his wealth, because he moved on from magazines, obviously. He's always been a controversial figure in the tech world. His company released the first commercial antivirus software, McAfee Virus Scan, and that helped to spark a multi-billion dollar industry in the computer world, and that was eventually sold to Intel for more than $7 billion. So what's said is that John personally got over $100 million in the sale of that business. And I'm sure with the amount of data that his company was seeing, he probably knew more than the average bear, and probably things like secrets or other incriminating things against high-profile figures. And we'll get into that later, but this leads to some of his eccentricities that he describes as coming from all of this stuff that he wasn't supposed to see.
It's amazing how one person can have such a big impact on an entire industry like tech. But it's also ironic. He actually never used the software on his own computers or any other antivirus software for that matter.
Now that is strange. He once also admitted to the BBC that he protected himself. But again, not with software, Tom, to your point. He protected himself by constantly changing his IP address. He said he did not attach his name to any device he used, and he didn't go on to sites where he might pick up a virus. And so he cited as an example, he said, "I just don't go to porn sites."
Oh,
to me, Sounds like he's hiding something even bigger.
Well, am I ever going to go there? All right. Well, I guess that's one way to stay safe. He was, 100% a visionary in the tech space. You got to give him that. But he was also hot-headed, and his temperament got him into trouble throughout his life.
As did his drug and alcohol use. In fact, I've seen a ton of interviews, Tom, with John McAfee. I cannot recall seeing any interviews with him in the last 10 years where he is not on some sort of substance. So he sells the antivirus software and then does what? Because that was only in 1994.
Well, like any good story, the good ones typically involve someone becoming really rich and then losing every dollar of it. And John McAfee's no different. A combination of bad investments, the 2008-2009 financial crisis, increasing legal troubles, being on the run from U.S. authorities, all of these things caused his net worth to plummet. But before he lost it all, would you really believe me if I told you he invented some type of yoga?
Yoga, really? Is this like the magazine deal? Was he just hustling?
No, I don't think so. He actually got involved with yoga in his early 20s when he visited India for the first time. He even spent time following around a Maharishi. After making his fortune, he bought an expansive estate in Woodland Park, Colorado, where he held intensive retreats in relational yoga, his own creation. That's where in 2000 he met Greg Gumuccio, who had been promoting Bikram, but now decided to teach multiple forms of yoga. He also came up with observational yoga, wherein participants merely, get this, watch other people doing yoga.
No wonder he loses his fortune. Seriously, observational yoga? I've never even heard of that.
I have not.
That's a thing. I don't think my yoga studio down the street from my house would make very much in memberships if it was just observational yoga, because we could just watch from the window.
Put some chairs outside and pay for seating, and then they can just watch in the window.
Yeah, I guess. So we do know he loses his fortune. In 2008, as you mentioned, the stock market crashed, wiped him out. So McAfee sought refuge in the luxurious tourist enclave of Ambergris Cay, located in Belize. However, instead of retreating to a life of tranquil opulence, his world seemed to spiral into chaos. Big surprise. Eager to venture into new territory, McAfee made a bold announcement. He's now moved on from yoga. He's departed from the realm of computer tech and virus programs, and he has his sights set on a new venture, manufacturing what he calls herbal antibiotics. And these are some sort of innovative product that he claimed to disrupt bacterial communication, offering a potential breakthrough in medical science. But as the story unfolds, McAfee's path took an unexpected turn.
John McAfee seems to be the king of unexpected turns from what we've heard so far.
Can I say that based on what I know of him, these turns are not unexpected, Tom?
Well, I'm sensing that. Soon enough, suspicions arose around McAfee's production plant located in the Belize district of Orange Walk. What raised eyebrows even further was that the day-to-day operations were being managed by his guests' girlfriends, who possessed no scientific knowledge or expertise. This, I guess you could call unusual arrangement, sent shockwaves through the community and drew the attention to the legitimacy of McAfee's enterprise.
You think?
Right? The audacious move into herbal so-called antibiotics, further added to the enigmatic nature of McAfee's post-fortune endeavors. While the concept held promise, the questionable setup, lack of scientific expertise surrounding the operation. It just left many questioning his intentions and casting doubt on the overall legitimacy of the venture.
Yeah, what's interesting with McAfee, Tom, is that in some ways he's a genius, but he's like a maniacal genius, right? He does have really unique, innovative projects. And so when he says that he's going to do this thing with herbal antibiotics, part of me wants to believe, yeah, you know, of course he'd be on the cutting edge of this, but it also seems like there's so much chaos in his life that follows him around that it leaves you going, no, there's no way, because you wouldn't have young women that are all his girlfriends cooking this stuff up on his property. So that brings us back to his property, because there's this pivotal moment that happens in 2012 where his compound became the center of a dramatic raid. And what unfolded on that fateful day revealed a startling sequence of events, escalating tensions, and the narratives were pretty conflicting. We have Belizean police that arrive at McAfee's door, and here they see an astonishing sight. McAfee himself answers the door completely naked, brandishing a gun. And to add to the surreal scene, he's got a terrified 17-year-old girl waiting in his bed, and she's a witness to the whole thing.
Oh, boy.
So the accusations that were hurled at McAfee were pretty grave. They said he was manufacturing methamphetamines. Well, maybe you don't have to have a scientific background to make methamphetamines. That kind of seems like an explanation for these herbal antibiotics. The raid resulted in the loss of one of McAfee's dogs, and it also led to his detention. But McAfee vehemently denies the allegations, and he was spinning a different tale for his supporters, of which he has a lot online, I have to say. Millions of people follow him. And according to McAfee, he was engaged in a battle against political corruption, and the raid on his factory occurred shortly after he refused demands from a local politician for a $2 million donation.
Hey, Dom, a $2 million donation, that's tax deductible, right?
Well, he didn't actually file the tax returns, but no, you cannot deduct bribes. Remarkably, McAfee managed to escape conviction for drug crimes, and instead, the Belizean police pinned him on weapons charges, although he was eventually released from this. So this raid and the aftermath of the raid left McAfee seething with anger, and he wanted justice. He saw it as an injustice to himself. So he's interviewed in 2016 with an Australian journalist, and McAfee said how frustrated he was. He proclaimed that he would not be silenced, and he talked about the loss of his dog, how his property was destroyed, and he talked about allegedly being tortured, but using all of that stuff to fuel his determination to expose what he believed to be a grave injustice. Here's what John, in that 2016 interview, said, because he's here being John.
Let's go all the way back. I mean, my first trip to the Amazon, when I went to Ecuador and went down the river and first tasted human flesh, the attraction for human flesh was like so profound that, you know, when I came back to the States and they accused me of eating small children, I wasn't sure that I had actually done it or not.
Right. You realize I can't be using any of it.
You realize that none of that actually happened somehow. But you were clever to catch on to it that fast.
So this incident with the raid, it just fed into his paranoia. McAfee was consistently raising concerns about his safety, and the reasons why, though, were never really made clear. Fear of inciting competitors in whatever he was producing, criminals after what was left of his fortune, political enemies, we don't know. He was well known for surrounding himself with heavily armed security guards drawn from ex-military. He kept a pack of dogs that roamed the perimeter of his property who were trained to attack.
Yeah, it sounds like he had some fear there. And his neighbor really didn't like what was going on at John's compound. Can you imagine being John McAfee's neighbor? The dogs, the guns, the security, the young girls. So his neighbor in Ambergris K was Gregory Fall. Fall was a 52-year-old retired Florida restaurateur. And he was known for his impatience with the dogs because the dogs were off leash. And he regularly visited a nearby beach bar and was constantly complaining and expressing his frustration with these aggressive animals. So it was no secret that there were tensions simmering between Gregory Fall and John McAfee's dogs. And then tragically, the dogs were discovered dead one day. So you've got Fall complaining about them. They mysteriously turn up dead. He's living just three doors away, and naturally he becomes the prime suspect. His previous remarks about wanting to poison the animals cast a cloud of suspicion over him, but the perplexing turn of events didn't end there. The following day, Fall was found lifeless, lying in a pool of blood. Nearby, there was a 9mm bullet casing that was a chilling reminder of the violence that had occurred. And suddenly the spotlight turned to McAfee, who emerged as the key person of interest in this case. Let's see, your dogs are all dead. You love your dogs. Now the guy who you think poisoned your dogs shows up dead.
I mean, so it just makes sense to me, right?
Circumstances surrounding that death really left investigators with many questions. It's suspicious. And the proximity, McAfee's like right there. He has a complex relationship with the victim. And that only intensified their investigation of him. So again, the cybersecurity pioneer found himself embroiled in a high-profile investigation with the eyes of the world fixated on his every move.
I bet that just stoked the fire of McAfee's paranoia. He already thought before this that people were out to get him. How did he handle it?
He didn't, Tom. He didn't wait around to clear his name. He did a runner. And he later admitted that that was something that probably made him look guilty. But McAfee said he wasn't running away from the arrest, but running for his life because he was convinced that this murder of Fall was a failed hit on him by one of his enemies.
Well, what I know now is true McAfee style. He became a fugitive with one of his girlfriends, 20-year-old Samantha, and a documentary crew from Vice magazine in tow as he headed from Belize to Guatemala to escape.
He took a film crew with him?
He certainly did. One of the things I've learned about McAfee is he feeds on attention. If he were just to sneak off, hey, that's not as daring or as fun. He had an interview scheduled, so he just took the guys from Vice with him. So there's a documentary out called Running with the Devil. It has a lot of the footage and story from this time in John's life.
They're trying to arrest me for coming into the country illegally. We know that this is merely a move to keep me from doing our press conference.
Whoa. Wait.
John, where are you going?
To jail.
When will you be out?
Oof. So John escapes Guatemala, and it turns out that there's a reason for that, Tom, right?
Yeah, his girlfriend Samantha has an uncle who is similar to the attorney general of the country. John hopes when he wins over the uncle as the dashing and rich 67-year-old boyfriend of his 20-year-old niece, he's going to be provided safe passage. Yeah, it didn't work. He was arrested for illegally entering the country.
Yeah, I imagine he would have been arrested either way, asking anything of this 20-year-old girlfriend's family. Interestingly, though, Vice posted pictures of McAfee on social media and online, and those pictures are what led to his capture because they still had GPS coordinates attached to them, and that's how they knew where to find him.
But John had a plan. He faked two heart attacks in Guatemala. The authorities had enough of him, and so they deported him back to the, I guess, the safety, you could call it, of the United States.
And what about his girlfriend and the Vice journalist that he brought with him as he snuck into Guatemala?
I mean, he just left them there.
Oh, my God. But I bet that was probably music to the uncle's ears.
I bet. I'm sorry, Samantha, but now you can find someone a little bit more reliable back home in your country.
Now, you've got this guy that's the king of cybersecurity, and I'm always curious to know, what do they do for security? Tom, you mentioned that he doesn't even have the software on his own computers.
Which tells me that the whole thing was a scam. Like, he looked at, like, the magazines, probably. He's just going to make money off of it, and that's all it was.
Yeah. Well, it was a pretty big scam because all of the governmental agencies ended up with McAfee antivirus on their computers. Computer manufacturers started selling computers with its stock on there. Now, I'm always really curious to know, what is somebody who is that paranoid about security and identity theft? What advice does someone like John McAfee have on protecting yourself with privacy and security on your cell phone?
This is the problem that cybersecurity professionals face every day. While you are watching your phone is watching you. The operating system is designed specifically to watch you, listen to you, find out where you are. It needs to know who your friends are. It needs to know what you're saying in your text messages. It needs to listen to you sometimes. It is the world's greatest spy device. But hackers use those same facilities. They are built into the operating system. If a hacker gets access to those facilities, they may choose to empty my bank account without my permission or knowledge, or to steal my identity, or to start charging things on my credit card. That's the problem that we have, and that's just on the individual level. On the corporate level, it's horrific. Because the problem is magnified by the number of people within the corporation. And on the nation state level, it's even more horrific. The world is changing rapidly. The entire world is teetering on the edge of a cliff, dangerously, where we are allowing these devices to basically become our masters rather than the other way around. And these devices are spy devices. We buy them so they can spy on us. And that's creating a great deal of danger. It would be a horrific world. It should be waking people up. But instead, we're still drawn into this tiny, little, colorful, entertaining screen. The most secure is, it's this one, the one that I carry, and it's a Samsung S7. And the reason is, it is the only phone that cannot be remotely rooted or remotely jailbroken.
He says that he keeps a dumb phone.
What exactly is a dumb phone?
Well, he's referring to sort of the old school flip phones, you know, that can't text, that don't have internet. You know, there's no GPS on these dumb phones to follow you around. John says, even with a brand new cell phone, when you call just three people, the government can find you. He says he lives in what's called a Faraday cage. I've actually heard about Faraday bags before. Have you, Tom?
Yeah, I've heard of these actually, yes.
So the police usually, when they're doing an investigation and they come upon a cell phone or they get a subpoena to search a cell phone, they'll usually put devices like that inside of a Faraday bag, and that blocks signals from coming in and out of the device itself. the fact that he takes it that seriously, I guess that tells you a little bit of, about something. If nothing else, it's just that he's paranoid.
Well, that's what I'm actually wondering. Is a lot of this stuff truly because there is something going on around him? Or is it simply his paranoia feeding on itself? I don't think we'll actually ever know the true story.
I don't think we will either. Paranoia is one side effect of substance abuse. And so it doesn't surprise me that we have someone that focused on a product that solved a problem of security, suddenly thinking that everybody's out to get him. He said he uses a very serious VPN that goes through 9 different countries to ensure his privacy. When he's on a trip or vacation, he takes pictures, but he doesn't post them immediately. And then he adds bogus information to the photos that are posted, like dates and locations, to keep people guessing about where he is.
I just don't know what to say about that. That just seems like a lot of work to maintain one's so-called privacy.
Absolutely. And it's also a lot of work to live on the run and in constant fear that somebody's out to get you. Tom, what precautions do you take for cybersecurity with your tax practice?
Well, as you know, tax professionals are required to have a written information security plan. And actually, tax professionals are supposed to attest every time they renew their P10 that they have that plan. And because tax professionals have access to such sensitive data, we really need to have practices and procedures that put data security first. The cost of a security breach to a tax professional could be career-ending, unfortunately.
Right. I know that we're required to have that written information security plan, but it's not a bad idea. When I went through the exercise myself for my own firm, it actually reassured me that even in the situation where you get hacked and somebody has now access to your system, there's a lot of contents in that document that are helpful for trying to get things locked down and restored right away. So if you think about all the different passwords that we have and the security procedures that we must perform and the backups and all of that, it kind of gathers and organizes all this information in one place so that in the unlikely event that there's an emergency, I can go right to that document and it gives me an outline of what to do first. And I found that very comforting. So I'm glad that there's that requirement now.
Oh, I agree. And with the fact that our practices are moving more and more digital every day, it's essential that those safeguards are in place. If we're the trusted advisor to clients, we have to also be trusted with their data. And the only way we can do that is with proper data security techniques.
And it doesn't mean you have to suddenly become a computer programmer or a genius like John McAfee to implement something like this. A lot of our software providers actually have things available that we can follow if you just ask. So asking providers like your E&O insurance provider what sorts of security measures you should have in place, asking your tax software provider, your provider of portals, things of that sort, and get familiarizing yourself with their protocols for how they protect the data as well. Super important.
Absolutely.
So I think a paper plan security program is definitely worthwhile, and it helps keep us in compliance with the law. Man, I'm exhausted already just getting this far in John's shenanigans, and we haven't even gotten to the bulk of his crimes yet.
I know what you mean, but I guess John McAfee, while much older than us, has enough energy to do laps, even if those laps are illegal.
Are you saying that's enough for today, Tom?
I think this is a good place to leave off. But be sure to come back next time where, fresh off the lam, John, guess what, makes a bid for President of the United States in the 2016 election.
That actually doesn't surprise me. That was a crazy election already. And I actually didn't think it could get even crazier, but I guess John McAfee was in the race. And his story doesn't end there. So we'll talk about who he brought with him on his next international escape, the millions he scammed from crypto investors, and the tax fraud ultimately ending in a mysterious Epstein-style death in a Spanish prison. So be sure to join us next week for the conclusion of Web of Suspicion, Unraveling the Mystery Surrounding John McAfee.
Thank you so much, everyone, for listening. On the next episode, we're going to hear about the reason the police came to McAfee's house and unburied the dead dogs. You're not going to want to miss it, and we will unpack the story further and dive deeper into the life, death, and crimes of the infamous John McAfee.
Well, and before we go, we encourage you to subscribe so you never miss a story. See you in part two, where we'll learn about McAfee's police station he started, his transformation of a brothel into a family swimming pool area. You're not going to want to miss it.